This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Just a quick warning, this episode contains explicit language.
From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Ana Maria Sayer. Let the chisme begin.
This ain't Texas.
Felix.
What, man?
It's a nice song.
It is a great song.
Let's let Beyonce sing it. You know, I had a friend who used to say that to me all the time. Every time I sing. Who sings that song? Yeah, why don't you let them sing it?
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It's brutal.
It's very brutal toward me.
I'm sorry. I take it back. I'd listen to you over Beyonce any day, Felix.
But you know what? That's only because I've been listening to the Beyonce record all weekend.
Oh, my God. I've listened to it like 10 times already.
I like it for a whole bunch of reasons, but I'm still trying to process everything that it means and everything that's there. But one thing in particular, even before the record came out, when that song that I just butchered came out, conversations have been stuff that we've been talking about. Who has a right to sing, in this case, country music?
Right, because obviously there's been a massive contribution from Black artists to country music, but there's also been, like with many things in this country, a huge Latino contribution in many ways.
And there are and have been many, many Latino artists singing country music, straight out country music. And a lot of those artists, either African-American or Latino musicians, they don't get the recognition. And they haven't been getting the recognition for not just the contribution to the history of country music, but also the state that it's in now, like where country music is today and how these musicians are contributing to that tradition.
It's like this thing we always talk about genre just being this construct from labels to sell music. And it's widely known that, you know, country was made to be seen as this white genre because that's what labels wanted. When in reality, there's actually tons of Latino and Black artists who have contributed, but that recognition goes down to literally who's getting radio play. In fact, in 2021, there was a study by Jada Watson, the principal investigator of Song Data. They found that in over 11,000 songs played on country format radio from 2002 to 2020, that only 0.6% of those songs were from Black artists. But also, that only 0.4% of those songs were from Latino artists.
So we're going to try to set the record straight this week.
Like we love to do.
Okay. We're going to feature Latino artists who are playing country music and talk a little bit about that history as well. And to do that, we went to...
Where are we this week, Felix?
Austin, Texas.
You finally came with me.
Yes. Yeah, I joined you on a trip. We went to Austin specifically to talk to Carrie Rodriguez, a Latina who has been performing country and bluegrass music for her entire career.
And she's such a delight.
Let's go back a few weeks to when we were in Austin, Texas with Carrie Rodriguez. Carrie Rodriguez, welcome back to Alt Latino.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's good to see you again.
You too.
Carrie, this is also our first time meeting ever. I've heard a lot about you, so.
Well, I've heard you and your beautiful voice. But yes, it's exciting to be sitting next to you.
Well, I too had heard your beautiful voice. What a coincidence. This is amazing.
Sweet.
Funny how that works out. One of the things we wanted to talk about in this episode was the idea that you can be Latino and you can sing country music and it doesn't have to be affected or appropriated or anything like that.
We have to preface this, Carrie, by saying Felix and I had a lot of arguments over this episode.
Really?
Uh-huh.
What were they about?
I think what excites us about Latin country and what we think, like our conceptions of it might be slightly varied, is what I think it is.
Fundamentally, right off the bat, it's the way you label it. It's not Latin country. For me, it's Latinos who sing country.
Sure.
Okay, so that's the idea. That was the concept behind the show.
Yeah.
Initially.
And I actually don't disagree with that. Like, I think to me, I was confused by the label Latin country because I was like, well, what makes Carrie Latin country besides the fact that she's Latina? That doesn't really make it Latin country. But I'm curious if Carrie would herself label herself as Latin country.
I'm shaking my head, no.
I was like, no. She's shaking her head, but
I mean, who I am does inform my music and the way I write a song. So I guess in that sense, I've never even heard the term Latin country, but the sound of what comes out of my mouth or how I play the violin, fiddle, is country. It is country. Mm-hmm. And I don't differentiate, cultures when I think about country music necessarily, because I see it as a blend of so many things.
Well, so that makes me curious, and I'm jumping here, but straight to kind of the conversation that Felix and I had, it makes me curious where you stand on what is maybe more accurately Latin country, or something that could be considered Latin country, which is an actual like fusion or blend of Latin sounds and country music, or in the case of some Latin artists, like most recently, obviously, Karin León has, I'm sure you heard, this mm-hmm. single that came out. He is obviously like a straight ahead Latin artist who is now releasing a country song. Where do you feel like that sits? Do you and Karin León in this world exist in the same universe, or is that just an independent thing mm-hmm. from anything that you're doing?
Yes, I do believe there is a place for him to be labeled as country, because in my mind, so much of Mexican music is country music. So like ranchera music, for example, ranch music, right? I mean, that music came out of people who had to leave the countryside and leave their homes, right? And go work in the cities, but they had this nostalgia for home and for being out in nature. And it's like so much thematically of what country music, and I'm using air quotes, but what we think of as country music is. So I've always seen that connection and felt like Mexican music and Texan country music are like super linked and really kind of the same. Like when I hear, for example, songwriter like Chente or like Cuco Sanchez.
De piedra de ser la cama, de piedra las cabeceras, la mujer que a mí me quiera, me ha de querer de a de veras. Ay, corazón, ¿por qué no ama?
To me, that's so similar to a Merle Haggard.
I'm tired of this dirty old city, entirely too much work and never enough play.
In terms of theme, I mean, the songs are so freaking sad and they make you cry your tears in your beer or your tequila or whatever, right? But it's at the heart, it's like the same to me. So I don't necessarily think, you have to separate.
Musically, they're different.
Yeah.
But thematically, it's the same. And so that's what my mother loved. My mother loved country music.
Yeah.
Because I said, when we were kids, like, why do you like country music? Well, it's the same as Mexican music. You tell stories. Mm-hmm. It's about sadness. It's about love, blah, blah, blah. But, but mariachi, obviously the mariachi song structure, the honky-tonk song structure, the conjunto song structure is different, but it's thematically, they're singing about the same stuff.
You know what's so funny, too, Felix, is my mom also loves country. She's always said to me, like, no one in my family does, except my mom. She's like, I just love the stories. That's like, that's the constant thread. But do you hear anything in the music outside of the lyrics, like stylistically, mm-hmm. instrumentally, like actually musically, that feels similar between the two?
I totally do. I mean, I think, first of all, like so many country songs are in three and have that feel. Like, and I am referencing ranchera music when I'm thinking about these similarities, but like these like kind of behind the beat songs in three, the violins, the melodies. Because like, to me, one of the greatest things about country music and Mexican music in general are melodies. Like, we got melodies, mm-hmm. and they stick in your head. Mm-hmm. I do hear a lot of similarities. And then also, like, you've got, there's so much that has influenced country music here in Texas. I've heard that, like, a lot of Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, a lot of the melodies and tunes were actually songs he learned from like Mexican people working in fields that he was working with out in Texas. There are fiddle tunes that he does that are sound like mariachi music to me.
I think one of the best ways to at least identify how this works is talk to us a little bit about how you grew up and what kind of influences you were hearing as when you were growing up in your households.
Okay. Well, I come from, you know, bicultural parents. My mom was white, born in Houston. My dad was Mexican-American, also born in Houston. And I mostly grew up with my mom in the house. Didn't see my dad that much, although the place where we connected was music. So his music did have a big impact on me.
When you say his music, what did he play?
So he was a folk singer, songwriter. He came up in the 70s with artists like Townes Van Zandt. Like, they shared stages all the time. And his style of music was very much in that vein of telling a story, finger picking. It's a little bit country. It's a little bit folk. But he also sang in Spanish, too. And I have memories of him singing like Y Volveré or Los Laureles, for example. And every time he would sing those songs, like, I would want to cry. And I hated that. So musically, that's what I was hearing from him. And my mom, though, had such eclectic taste in music, and she would blast opera in the house, and folk singers, and everything. The Beatles and, you know, the gamut. So a lot of things.
So, and then at what point did that inspire you to pick up the violin?
Well, that came pretty early. I was 5, and they were offering Suzuki violin lessons in my elementary school.
Yeah.
And it, for whatever reason, I'm like, that squawky, high-pitched thing sounds so fun. So I, yeah, started taking in kindergarten, and just was fish in water. Like, I never wanted to do anything else. But this was classical music that I was studying. Now, growing up in Austin, I was exposed to country music everywhere. You know, like, I would go see shows. My mom took me to see Itzhak Perlman, but she also took me to see Uncle Walt's band down at Waterloo, who's, you know, like, so I saw fiddle players and songwriters and everything. And, but was pretty serious about my classical studies. I even got into a conservatory, Oberlin, for my first year of college. And I was there, like, on a full scholarship. Supposed to be practicing my Tchaikovsky every day or whatever. But I realized as soon as I left Texas, I was like sitting in my dorm room playing country music records, CDs, okay, and trying to learn the fiddle parts and missing that music, which is so crazy. I don't think I'd ever thought about it much, you know, and I'm listening to Towns and I'm listening to Robert Earl Keane and Lyle Lovett albums. Just, that's what I wanted to play, even though I had this amazing, I was at this amazing school with this big opportunity, but I realized that wasn't for me. Like, I missed the music of Texas.
Standing out on Main Street across from Mr. Blues, my faded leather jacket, my weathered broken shoes. A chill north wind was blowing, but the spring was coming on, as I wanted to myself just how long I had been gone. So I strolled across old Main Street, walked down a flight of stairs, stepped into the hall and saw all my friends were there. A neon sign was flashing, welcome, come on in. It feels so good, feeling good again.
And is that when the violin became a fiddle?
Yeah, it's when it got its strings. You like that? Well, no, people, they always go, is there a difference between the violin and the fiddle? And you go, well, the violin has strings, fiddle's got strings.
We'll be back to our conversation with Kerry Rodriguez right after this.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. When you book through Capital One Travel using the Venture X Card, you earn 10x miles on hotels and rental cars and 5x miles on flights, and you earn unlimited 2x miles on all other purchases. Plus, receive a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. The Venture X Card from Capital One. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details. Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
This message comes from NPR sponsor CarMax. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because CarMax believes you shouldn't just settle for a car, you should love your car. That's why every car they sell has CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. Don't settle, find love at first drive. Start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
And we're back to our conversation with Carrie Rodriguez. You were born and raised in Texas, and because of that, this sound, it was in you, and it came back to you at a time in your life when you needed it. So there is something to be said about the authenticity of you creating within this genre in that sense.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And it has taken me a long time to find my most authentic, well, I'm still searching, but to really find my most authentic self within that sound. And, you know, that's maybe a lifelong, like, journey.
Having followed your career, like, I think we first met in 2005 when you were in the duo Chip Taylor and Carrie Rodriguez.
I'm so sorry that she hurt you. You know the way she is.
What's been fascinating to me, and you and I have talked about this before, is how you, it almost felt like when you released Lola, you were looking for something within yourself. You were going back to the Spanish-speaking, the Mexican part of your history, because you based it on, mm-hmm. I think, your aunt.
My great-aunt.
Your great-aunt.
Eva Garza. Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about going from classical violin, then playing fiddle, and then trying to understand a little bit more about the Mexican side of that.
Yeah, I guess I started singing with Chip Taylor and playing fiddle with him in 2001. Wow. I was so young, baby. And yeah, those early years, I mean, the way I sang and used my fiddle was very much straight up country. You know, I was, the way I sang, if you go back and listen to those records, so much twang. Yeah. Because I was singing country music. I don't know. It just came out that way. But after time, like, it did start to feel like I was just leaving out so much of me. And around that same time, my grandma, this is so cool that she did this. She'd always talked about my great aunt, Eva, and said, oh, you have this famous great aunt. And she sang with all the big stars. And she was in Mexican films. And I mean, I believed her. But I also thought maybe she was exaggerating a little bit, because that's what grandmas do, you know.
Believe me.
You know. So, but don't one day, she sent me a stack of CDs that she had burned from all of Eva's old albums. It was so much music. And I just remember putting on the first one. This is when I was living in New York. And hearing her voice with, like, a full mariachi band, you know, and just crying. Like, sitting down on the couch and crying. And realizing that this was also me.
Tarde que me invita a conversar con los recuerdos, pena de esperarte y de llorar en este encierro. Tanto en mi amargura te busqué sin encontrarte. Cuando vida moriré.
And the way that music made me feel is I could say it's similar to the way I felt when I heard my dad sing in Spanish, those songs. So that was the beginning of my journey of, okay, well, maybe I'll sing one song in Spanish at the end of my set. We'll just see what happens. And then, oh, maybe I'll add another. And so little by little, I started incorporating that into my music. And then that came into how I wrote a song. So even now today, like I just wrote a song the other day and it's totally Spanglish. So yeah, it has been a long, this is over like 20 years,
right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, it's been a long journey.
So where do you feel like you're at now on that journey? Are you equally comfortable, like not taking ginger steps, but actually like striding into the musical room? If we can imagine music as this big parlor, right? Yeah. Speaking in Texas terms, are you striding in there with,
no. I think it parlor, I don't think. I think dance hall.
Okay,
let's
dance
say dance hall.
Right, dance hall.
I was like,
right,
parlor,
yeah.
Makes me think of like 1800s.
Yeah, well,
like
that's what I was thinking of, right?
Parlor.
Okay, dance hall.
So yes. Striding into the dance hall, just equally confident in both?
Yeah, I'm going to use the example of the gig I did the other day. I did a gig for our Laboratorio series, which it's a musical celebration and exploration of Latinx culture. Okay. That's the byline. So our two guests that we featured were Rick Trevino, Latino country singer.
Maybe the jukebox will heal up a heartache, but I'd go in today.
And Ruben Ramos, who is the king of Tejano music.
Es el tiempo de llorar. Vas a dejarme.
He's a legend. He's a pioneer, and he actually helped shape the sound of Tejano music, bringing the big horns into it, and... he's 84 now, I believe.
Wow.
So in the same show, we had Rick singing country songs and Ruben singing Tejano songs, right? And I was accompanying them both and playing fiddle with Rick and violin on El Rey with Ruben and jamming on his blues, like Chicano soul kind of numbers. And honestly, I felt so much joy being on that stage and being able to jump around with those genres, and also feeling that it's all connected. Like, Tejano music is so American, right?
Right.
It's so, and so it's like everything we were doing on that stage just felt like it was rooted in Texas, and it was authentic and soulful. One of the first big bluegrass festivals that we played, Merle Fest, and it's a big one. It's in North Carolina. I don't know, it's 20,000 people there or something, right? And I'm playing on stage with Chip, and all of a sudden, it dawned on me. I'm like looking out at the audience, and I only see white faces. And then I'm thinking about who's playing and who's on the bill, and I realized in that moment, oh my God, I'm like the only Latina, Latino, at all in this whole place. I really felt that. And it was a kind of a shocking discovery. You'd think I would have noticed before that, right? But it took being at a place with a bunch of people to realize, oh, right, okay, no, I am different, in this setting at least,
right?
I don't even know what I did with that at the moment. I just have this vivid memory of the realization that I was alone there, in that sense.
When I met you guys, 2004, 2005, you were firmly in the whole Americana scene,
mm-hmm.
which is... as you described earlier, a little bit of country, a little bit of folk.
Right.
Is that how you would describe Americana?
I don't know. It's so vague.
It is very vague.
It really should. Well, I don't know what it should, but Americana, you would think, would encompass all roots music from this country. So technically, I think Americana should be just as much like conjunto and Tejano music as it is the blues, you know, as it is bluegrass.
Right.
Now, is it? No, I don't think so. Not yet. That's why, but this friend of mine coined the term Americhicana, talking about my music. It's my favorite thing ever. I use it all the time. So when someone asks me what kind of music I play, you know, now I don't have to say 10 different things. I just look at them in the eye and I say, Americhicana. And some awesome. Look confused, but some get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, I love that you said that, like, Tejano and Conjunto should fall under the Americana category, because there's also so many people that just want to throw it in regional and
yeah.
be like, well, that's whatever. It's, like, so emblematic of what these genres are.
Mm-hmm.
Rhiannon Giddens, the very well-known banjo player who played on the Beyoncé record, wrote a piece, an opinion piece about the controversy, all the conversation. But one of her concluding lines was that all of this music, it comes from so many different places, and as you just said, from all of these different cultures. So they should all be called Americana music. They should all be called country music. It's all wrapped into the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. That was a great article. I love that.
Yeah, and I did really like how she outlined the fact that everything was so much more regionally aligned, which to me then like gets into that conversation too, where we're talking about Texas music specifically, Texas's proximity to the border, like the synergy between all of these sounds, and it's like, well, it's all within this region. Get rid of the border. And it's all within this region, right?
This region that was Mexico.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, with that in mind, like, I'm bringing it back to this question that's been interesting to me. I brought up the Karim León thing. I also brought up to Felix earlier the fact that even Juanga experimented with country music at a certain point. Like, where is there an authenticity to that? Is there a legitimacy to that, given their proximity to the border? Or is this a uniquely this side of the border American country experience?
I think there is a legitimacy to that. Also because Texas was Mexico, right? And like we share a history that goes back for so many generations. So when I think about this region, I don't necessarily see that border. And for so many years too, the border was very fluid. You know, it's really only like in the last 20, 30 years that it's been so intensely divided. And so, yeah, I don't have any issues with an artist like that singing a country song, calling it country music, because I feel like we're all kind of from the same place.
It is interesting to me the timing of all of this, because as regional Mexican music is gaining more and more play, I mean, it's always gotten play on the border, right? But in other parts of the United States, I'm being told by a lot of people in Mexico that country music is actually getting more popular. Like, American country music is getting more popular in Mexico. Like, there's actually an intercambio in some ways happening with this music.
Yeah, that's exciting. I think that's great. Yeah.
There is this question, like I noted earlier, when you mentioned, like, and these sounds, they came back to me, and I felt the need to do... There's something about what you have within you musically, life experience-wise, you name it, genetically, I don't know, that, like, you're born and bred Texan at the end of the day, and that sound lives within you. And so I understand, to a certain extent, like, oh, if you're going to make this type of music, there has to be some relationship there. Where it gets sticky to me, or where I get kind of curious or interested, is as we're talking about, the border doesn't really exist. Like, this regionally, like you said, Texas used to be Mexico. So there is this question of, is there a certain level of that inheritance for Mexican artists on the other side of the border? Like,
are you looking? Both of you guys are looking at me.
I know, because he had a funny look on his face. I'm like, get used to it, Carrie. What's going on?
When you ask these questions, because I don't have an answer, other than, you know, history, but like, why doesn't this music exist, you know, in Arizona? Or along the California-Mexican border, right? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, because Texas is so unique that way with the musical influences. Certainly, accordions exist from, you know, for all along Texas, Arizona, into California. Accordions, that's the whole thing, right? But like, it doesn't, it just pops differently here in Texas, the whole country thing.
We have all these conversations about, like, race in this country and conflict in this country, and yes, that's real and it's happening and there's so much of it, and especially you look at a place like Texas and there's like, you're trying to fit all these puzzle pieces together of people who maybe don't even want to be fit together. But then you go to something like the Houston Rodeo and it is just like everyone enjoying music, enjoying life, enjoying the same things, having the same experiences, and Latinos going to country shows, and white people going to, you know, see Latin artists like who I was with, Ivan Cornejo. And it's like, I'm not saying everything's kumbaya because you pull out the guitar and yeah, but at the same time, like, we all want to cry to something. Like, everyone wants to, like, sing. That's why country and regional and whatever, they like, it's all storytelling. It's like the deepest connection, right? To like being a person is sharing your story through music. So it's like, why wouldn't we all want to listen to that?
Yeah. I mean, it breaks down all the barriers and the walls that we have, and it just immediately gets rid of that.
When you add in the African-American influence with the blues and the fiddle music.
The fiddle music, man. Yeah. Old-time fiddle music.
It adds a whole different layer, mm-hmm. which is what the whole national conversation is about, right?
Yeah.
What we're trying to do with this show is just establish a place in that conversation for the reality that Latino musicians also have a place at the table when we're talking about who has a right to sing country, right?
Yeah.
That's my official statement, and I stand by it.
I like it.
Well, I can't argue with that. Carrie, it's interesting that you talk about, you know, this flow that you have with now starting to write some songs in Spanish as well, because one of the artists I brought, his name is Sammy Arriaga. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a Miami-born, very young Cuban-American artist based in Nashville. So did not grow up with these sounds, but very much was like attracted to them, despite the fact that he grew up with all these kind of like various Latin, specifically Cuban sounds in Miami. He was attracted to the country sound. So he moved to Nashville and he writes these very much straight ahead country songs, but he has some Spanish versions of certain songs. He has, you know, some Spanglish versions. He specifically labels them as Spanglish, and he's gotten quite the following on TikTok by basically either countryifying popular Latin songs or vice versa by doing certain Latin songs with a country twang. So it's really interesting what he does musically, and he has this one really cute song, Banjos and Bongos. It's just like a love song, right?
You be the yow, I'll be the ola, I'll be the lime in your Coca-Cola. Can't wait to see where the song goes. You bring the banjo, I'll bring the bongo.
Like, it's silly, silly lyrics, but it's a really cute kind of like simplification of this, like, he's like, it's so simple. Like, it's a simple love song, and it shows this synergy between what he's trying to do there. It's really quite lovely.
Exact same story as Raul Malo for the Mavericks.
There goes my heart, breaking in two. There go my eyes.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think Raul Malo, like, paved the way for Cuban Americans to sing country music and be really good at it.
Well, and that's what's so funny is he talks about, you know, being born in Miami, having all of these Cuban influences and kind of just being really attracted to this country sound.
Yeah. I mean, like, when you hear, I just went back the other day. I was listening to some of the earliest Mavericks. They had huge hits in the 90s. And here's a, you know, Latino frontman leading a country band with Flaco Jimenez taking the accordion solo. And this is on mainstream country radio. So, pioneers.
Incredible pioneers. He's the one time I attended the Americana Fest in Nashville, he was voted into their Hall of Fame. You know, he's,
as he should be.
He's a legend.
He is.
And a voice.
And his voice, I swear to God, his voice keeps getting better and better.
Exactly.
If it's possible.
Exactly.
I don't know how that's possible.
Exactly.
But yeah, he's if I had to pick one favorite singer in the world, it's him.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's just, he's the Roy Orbison of our time.
Wow. Because recently, finally an all Spanish language Mavericks album.
And it's so good.
Oh my God, killed. Killed.
But I'm excited to hear the new one. I haven't listened yet. That's on my list this week.
And I do feel like there's other artists in a similar position to you who have this cultural inheritance that aligns with country music. I mean, there's this artist who's called Louis the Singer, another really young country artist who's from out of Texas, Fort Worth, Texas. And he literally has songs where he specifically talks about his right to performing this music, his song in particular, Come and Take It.
Texas booze, Mexican roots, single cat with a coat that shoots. Got a dog named Chill and he loves to fish. If I ain't country, then what is it? They say I ain't country, but my people started this thing they call country. Back when a man had a crop with his hands working land before Monday. I shouldn't have to fight for what's mine, but I'm taking it back, take it from me. Come and take it, come and take it from me.
Literally talking about his right to perform country music. He says, they say I ain't country, but my people started this thing they call country. And he kind of goes through outlining, almost like making his claim for like all the things about him that make him country, that make him entitled to perform this music. Because clearly, like, there has been a question of his entitlement to it. He also mixes a lot of moments of rap and hip-hop into his sound, which I am like, that is only something that could happen in this country. There's not really a rap sound that's super popular in Mexico right now, so it's very much an American artist making an American sound.
Gary Rodriguez, thank you so much. Thank you for so much for coming to talk to us about this. It's, you're obviously the first person I thought of to talk about this. I think it helps everyone understand a little bit more about what this national conversation is about. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun to talk. I mean, it was actually kind of therapeutic. Sure. Let's do it again.
That's what we do here.
Therapy.
Free therapy.
I think we have to end the show on, it's probably my favorite, and you know, it's my favorite song of yours, Lola.
I dreamed I was Lola Beltran.
And you were Javier Solís.
Yeah, and we were dancing and canoodling. Baila, baila, baila.
Like two little peas in a pod.
Blanco y negro in a worn out picture frame. Y en el otro lado, date is written by your name. In Anacrow, but I know those lips were red. Ribbon microphone, early 40s, CBS. Film and flash and hymns and light and give me a photograph that I can touch. I dreamed I was Lola Beltran, and you were Javier Solís. We were baila, baila, bailando while
it's a great song. First time I heard it, I just like, because it's so, it just said everything about me and our culture, you know. I dreamed I was Lola Beltran and you were Javier Solís. You don't have to explain who these people are. If you get it, then you know, right? It's like you get it.
Round and round, strings are in and out. Time sound captured in the room.
Signing off from Austin this week, you have been listening to Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Ana Maria Sayer.
Our show this week is produced and edited by Joaquin Cutler.
Our digital editor is Hazel Sills.
Grace Chung keeps our thing together.
Thank you, as always, to executive producer Soraya Mohammed and VP of Music and Visuals, Keith Jenkins.
Thank you for listening.
You were Javier Solís. We were baila, baila, bailando while you sang to me. I dreamed I was
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.